Blog Talk Radio.
Home of the stars, through the airwaves and on the big screen, coming to you live from Hollywood, it's Rated G Radio with your host, Garrett Miller.
Hey everybody, welcome to Rated G Radio. This is your host, Garrett Miller, and I am thrilled to be having you here tonight. We're going to do something a little odd, because normally I have a guest scheduled for tonight, and I'm going to send out my sincere apologies to Mr. David Sepulveda Lowe, who was kind enough to do a pre-recorded interview with me a couple of weeks ago. And when we did the interview, I'm thinking, yeah, life is great, no problems, no big deal, whatever the case. And the next thing I know, it's getting close to do the interview, so I'm getting ready to get it, you know, loaded up into the computer. And for days, I've been going, you know what? It's in my head. I will just get it loaded up later. No big deal. And then I dropped my iPad, and it cracked. So you remember that story from a couple of weeks ago. So I dropped my iPad, it broke, and went to the iPad store or the Apple store in Costa Mesa, and they were quite lovely in trying to help me. They did replace it for a fee. But it was certainly better than buying a brand new iPad Air or Air 2 that have hit the market and were much more expensive. So the kind folks at Apple got me set back up. I came back home and did a restore thinking everything would be great. Well, guess what? The restore didn't do anything until, you know, like 3 days before my interview with David. And so we had this fantastic conversation over Korean barbecue over in, you know, Hollywood. And the interview was gone. There was no way for me to do anything. It was just dumb that my iPad broke. But it broke. However, talked to David over the weekend, and I said, you know, apologies aside. And by the way, I think this is the real reason it happened, is that he did not enjoy the lunch that we had, where we had lunch at. He picked it, too. So lunch was not to his strong suit. Now, I will tell you that what they served me was like a vegetable beef broth type of soup. It was quite delicious. I would actually have that again, but what he got, he didn't enjoy. So with that, he didn't have a good lunch. We had a very nice interview, and I said, this must just be the universe's way of saying that you need to go ahead and do another interview with me, and we'll just go to a different restaurant, and we'll do it. Because normally he teaches a MMA jiu-jitsu type of a fighting class during this time at 7 o'clock Pacific Standard Time. So he's not able to do it. And so, you know, the only other option we had was to do it at like 9 p.m., which, well, that's just not going to happen for me, or do that pre-record. So hopefully we'll have David back on sometime soon. I'm going to hope for May or June that we can arrange for that. And in a little bit, we're going to have Mary Lou Monroe Ray call in, and we're going to chit-chat about headlines of the day. I will tell everybody that starting today, this is the Monday show, but depending upon when you're listening to it, it may come at a different point in time. We are now live on West Star Radio Network in the United Kingdom 5 days a week at 5 p.m. So if you are listening to us on West Star Radio Network, I want to thank Stuart and everybody involved in the programming team there for getting us on 5 nights a week on UK airwaves. That's always very, very exciting. I hope that you enjoy the programming that we have here. It's talk radio, so I'm not curing the world's ills or doing anything crazy like that, but I usually have a fun guest on 5 nights a week, and Monday through Thursday is what we call the, you know, lifestyles and entertainment portion, and then on Friday, it's the Friday two-hour dance party, and so we'll usually have a guest on from around the world, and we will play their music live. So this Friday, now depending upon how it airs for you over there on West Star Radio, we have the UK's band. This is your own band. They're going to be the guest on Rated G Radio. They're called the Worry Dolls, and Emma from the Worry Dolls is going to be doing a live interview with me on Friday. So I'm excited for you to hear that. I think it's a great opportunity to showcase music from around the world. But just to give you an idea of what we've got going on this week, here's your roadmap for the week. Monday today, we've got Mary Lou Monroe Ray. She's live from Brisbane, Australia. She's going to be talking with me in just a minute. Tuesday, tomorrow, we've got Deb Hull with a skincare line called LaDara. And LaDara, LDARA, LaDara. It's a skincare line that reduces wrinkles and anti-aging and all this wonderful stuff. It won all kinds of awards in 2014, and it is changing facial care for the better. I use the product. It is absolutely crazy fantastic. Thursday, we have the Sydney Surfer. That's what I call him. Live from Sydney, Australia, we'll have Mark DePina, but he likes to be called Dip. And Dip is a master poet, and he's going to be coming on the show Wednesday to read poetry and talk about his recent two-week surfing trip that he was able to take. Thursday, we have what we call Super Gay Radio. So we're going to have Kurgan Edward Stout. He's a best-selling author of a couple of books, but the most recent one is called Gifts Not Yet Given. And Kurgan is going to be on the show with me on Thursday, and we're going to talk about gay issues around the country. And I never know what they are until that night, because that's when I start going to pull out articles that we can sit and talk about. So Thursday's that, and then again Friday we've got the Worry Dolls. So it's a fun-filled, fast, action-packed week. And I'm glad you're here on Rated G Radio. And the lady that's in the background here is Mary Lou. Mary Lou, welcome to the show. How's your afternoon in Brisbane, Australia today?
Hey, Garrett, how are you going?
It's crazy.
Can you hear me?
Mary Lou. I can hear you
it
great.
It is.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. It's great. Well, it's a beautiful day. We have had lots of rain from the cyclones that have been hovering around Australia. So they've come in and there's been big storms and then they just leave again. With all the changes that this huge eclipse we've had, you know, the energy's still around us at the moment for lots of movement and shifting until about April the 4th. So I think everybody's been feeling that. I don't know about you, but it certainly has had an impact on many people around the globe, and beautiful, beautiful video shots of the total eclipse itself that went around. You know, it's just, it's such an amazing phenomenon to be able to witness. We didn't really get to see it down here, but I know the UK did, and probably different parts of the world at different times. So, you know, and that's the closest the sun and the earth has, that the moon has come closest in a long time, which made it a super moon. And then the whole magic of the total eclipse just passing
so
by
I've
the
got
earth
a question
and blocking it out.
I've got a question for you, Mary Lou, because this eclipse thing happened, and everybody's talking about it. I don't think we saw anything of it here in California, which I was, you know, I was really an hour late to the party, apparently. But I was saying, well, did you see it? Did you see it? And everybody around me was like, no clue. So I think it hit different parts of the world much, much stronger than it hit us here in California.
I think so. I know the UK actually saw it. And it's just, you know, that time period in the world when the sun was up. So, you know, and I think it was early morning here. I didn't actually check on the time when it was, would have been here in Brisbane or in Australia, but I think it would have been the wee hours of the morning before the sun arose here. So, and a lot of photos I did see, there was a lot of cloud too, but you could just, and I think some people tried to capture it with their iPhones, but you know, they didn't have perhaps the camera to be able to grasp it. But, you know, they were there. They were obviously witnessing it. So I have seen them in my life, and it is quite a phenomenon. It reminds me of the Whoopi Gold movie she did, and she went back in time from the future, and I think Merlin had something to do with it there. And they were trying to, you know, they were all scared of her magic and they didn't believe she had magic. And so she knew, being a scientist as she was in the movie, she said, well, I can make the sun go away. And of course she knew the timing that this total eclipse was due. So
there you go. That's
for her.
There that's
you go.
Cute.
I love Whoopi. She was funny. I had to laugh. I thought, yes, it's all smoke and mirrors really at the end of the day, but not real phenomenon. You know, that's just something that's an incredible, magical experience that we are, you know, in the galaxy and here on Earth, and all these wonderful, amazing things are happening around us, you know.
No kidding.
Yeah. And, my friend, the tables are turning today. You know, usually...
They are turning a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, well, a little bit, yes. Because the ping pong match is on. People will be pinging you, but it'll be because I'm going to interview you today. Yes.
Well, I'm
the
looking forward to it.
Ping pong match is on. So am I. So what's it like in California, Garrett Miller?
It's, well, as far as like Celsius goes, I would say it's probably about 27 to 29 degrees here today. I mean, it's a warm day. Very nice, about 80-something today, you know, low 80s.
Okay.
But nice and warm, very sunny. You know, some, you know, here's the deal. In Southern California, you know, we get about, you know, out of the 365, we probably really legitimately have 320 or 330 days of sunshine a year. And when we get closer to the beach, the temperature variance is very, very little. So even in the wintertime when it's very, very cold, it's still warm. It's blisteringly warm compared to, you know, to other parts of the country. So we're always very, very lucky. So, yeah, but summertime really starts about, you know, now and lasts through, you know, the end of October. So the warm weather is here. The crowds are starting to come. The free parking on the street in Huntington Beach becomes harder and harder to find. And it's, you know, but, okay. You know, you have a lot of people at the beach and it's a lot of fun. So, you know, I always say come on down and hang out and spend some money on the local economy.
Yeah. Well, I'd love to come there. It's probably been one of my dreams for quite a long time. And it's obviously the Golden State. It all happens in California.
It does.
Some of the greatest songs have been written about it. But now, I'd like to talk about you, Garrett Miller.
Oh, goodness.
Radio
gracious.
Host. Yes, singer. No, it's time. It's time.
Okay,
all
okay,
your
okay.
Listeners for so long, find it. About your actor, producer, photographer. You do voiceover talent. You've done acting. And, of course, you're a beloved dog lover and owner of those, you know, your beautiful little puppies. You know, Eric the Mighty and
well, they're all special in their own way.
And
yeah.
They are. And I hope you guys are listening very tentatively today because you're going to hear about your dad.
Eric and Sookie are right by my feet, and Bill, Angie, and Jenny are underneath the covers. Now, here's the thing I don't understand. So, you know, they have blankets, they've got dog beds, they can be outside, they can be inside. And for most part, even when the weather is hot, now that I've given them a stairway up to the bed, during the day, you know, so I go to make the bed. The bed's great, you know, and it looks fantastic. You could shoot a photo shoot here. And then after the dogs eat and they run around outside for a little bit, they get underneath the covers and then they, like, mush the covers all together so it looks like nobody's made the bed in about 8 weeks. So then I make the bed with the dogs underneath of it, you know, like 45, and I finally just give up. And it's like, you know, I never have company over, so, you know, I don't really need to, you know, impress anybody. So I'll just let the dogs be comfortable during the day, and Eric and Sookie usually stay down by my feet.
Well, they like that lived-in feeling. They nestle into it because it's the energy there and it's home and they can snuggle. You know, otherwise you'd have to get them their own comforter. So they just take yours and they muscle together. I think that's what's going on.
There you go. There you go. That's exactly it.
Yeah, and you actually, with your beautiful little fellas, they were rescue little chihuahuas, Sookie, Bill, Eric, Jenny, and Angie.
Well, you know, one of the big things that everybody knows about me is that I love animals. I'm preferential to dogs. I love cats. You know, I'm not really a big reptile fan, so, you know, I'm going to be the traditional cat and dog person. It's not that I don't like cats. I love cats, and cats love me. I'm just more of a dog person. My rationale behind this is that, you know, cats, they're very, I'll love on you when I feel like it, and if I don't feel like it, I like to be needed by my puppies. And I've always had large dogs until shortly before coming to California, where, you know, at one point at my house, I had 8 labs. So, you know, I was technically insane. But, you know, those were all rescues as well. And they were just absolutely fantastic dogs. And you know, moving over to California, I now have, you know, 5 little ones. But, you know, 3 of them came from one household. And it was from a client that was moving. They were going to leave the dogs in the house in the hot Arizona weather in the summer and just hope that whoever came and found the house would, you know, take care of the dogs. I'm like, there is no friggin' way you're going to do that. So I grabbed the 3 dogs and, you know, brought them home and, you know, like I needed a hole in my head. But I was like, well, at least they're 3 small dogs. But I just got Sookie the day before. Eric hadn't come into the family yet. I had a different small guy at that point. But, you know, it's just, you just don't do that. You know, if you're going to be irresponsible and have, you know, and breed pets, which I am completely against in all ways because there's enough animals out there that you don't need to breed them. But if you're going to do that, you need to be responsible and take care of these things. And if you don't want to take care of them, there's enough no-kill shelters out there. And if you can't find that, you need to suck it up until you can do it. You know, because if you've brought these animals into the world, that's your responsibility. And I really don't have any respect for people who don't treat these little angels as, you know, God's gift to us, because they really are.
Oh, they are indeed. You know, animals, they bring balance to the world, and they have helped and rescued their owners. They just have this innate ability to, despite some of our human shortcomings, they just still love us. And the dog, to me, is, and what I've been taught, is how to learn to be your own best friend, because they will always try to please you and be there for you. They
absolutely
show loyalty and service. You're like no other four-legged animal that I know. And, yeah, cats are funny. You know, I think they teach you a little bit about independence and to respect my space, a bit like the skunk does. You know, you already know the skunk's reputation.
Right.
And if you don't, you know, the skunk will say, well, you respect my space and I might trust you and like you and come over to you. But if, you know, if you disrespect me, well, you're going to feel the brunt of that. And usually a bathtub full of tomato juice will help sort it out.
Yeah,
but, oh,
maybe.
It's not pleasant. It is not. Yeah, maybe. That's right. A week of it. And a spa.
Yeah.
And 10,000 laps in the pool. And so that says a pretty big message there about respect my space. You know, but animals are just the most beautiful teachers. And our recent guest, too, Rick Mora, because Rick is the ambassador for Canine Rescue. What is it called? L.A. Haven?
Probably
Is
it the L.A. No Kill Shelter? I should know this. We had him on the show, but I don't have that in front of me right now.
I know, and I don't have that in front of me. But it's Husky Haven, that's it. Husky Haven.
Oh, nice.
And,
okay, cool.
Yeah, he's been a great advocate for them, and they rescue a lot of husky dogs, and I think probably other dogs as well. And, you know, like you said, if you're going to have a pet, you know, I think, first of all, people need to know how to be responsible for themselves,
right,
and, you know, to the sacred space that they live within. And then to bring or care for someone else or for a pet, because that pet relies on you. You know, it
right.
can't just go off when it feels like it. It can't go off to the movies or go for a walk or socialize.
You're their life.
Unless you take that animal there. That's right. You are their care, and they take care of you in ways that are beyond unconditional love. You know, they're very beautiful, and we are very blessed to have them amongst us. So, Hugh, here, you'd be a great advocate for it as well, and, you know, for animal rescue and for...
You know, I've always said when I make my first, you know, quadrillion dollars that I want to become the Caesar Milan of Orange County and go buy a piece of property large enough that I could house, you know, happily and safely and all of that. So, you know, always with a good intention, not crazy way. But go have, you know, a dog sanctuary for, you know, all dogs. You know, because pit bulls, and I don't know why it is in Southern California, but it's, you know, in Southern California, it's Chihuahuas and pit bulls are bred like crazy. They're not, you know, and you're always hearing things on the news about, you know, these, you know, pet breeders and, you know, who aren't licensed, who aren't doing it the right way, the blah, 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 blah. And they'll go and rescue, you know, 50, 60, 70, 80, 100 animals that are just, you know, starving, malnourished, you know, oftentimes left to die. And, you know, the people are like, well, you know, it's not a big deal. I'm just like, you just don't get it. There's a special place in hell for people like you, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, there are some people, I remember there's been a few cat ladies, but where they've taken on all these animals, and because it's a big thing here, too, when they go and investigate situations, I'm sure that's everywhere in the world, where if an animal's been reported for being mistreated or people are abusing them for their own purposes, you know, with, you know, like the whippets and the greyhounds, horses, things like that, that, you know, that's a really big deal. And they will go in there and they will try and, you know, help those animals, and there are people who are veterinarians and their teams that will actually nurse that animal back, and, you know, they put a big thing out for people who can house them and actually treat them with the respect that they so deserve. And but sometimes these people are so loving and their intention is good, but they don't have the means themselves to be able
right,
to
yeah.
cater for all those
Very
animals
sad.
and they can't cover you know, for fleas and, you know, all the different shots that they need to be healthy animals. And
yeah.
then people do, like you say, they get overbred and then they get put into shelters and places, you know, because they just can't cope, or they dump them sometimes. I mean,
it's horrible.
Inhumane. It is. And as I always say, we are a family of humanimality. Human and then the big A animal,
mm-hmm.
humanimality.
Mm-hmm.
That's been my little thing for a long time. But on a happier note, there's a lot of people who do love animals. And
God bless them, you know.
And you see them. And you can see the love, you know, that's exchanged between the two. And they are. They're part of the family. That is their – some people don't have children. They have their pets, and they are considered family. And, you know, I put a beautiful post up yesterday about – a lady, Deirdre, I can't pronounce her last name, but she has rescued baby elephants for years and years and years.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
Yeah, and, you know, she lost a few, but now she's got this huge property, and when they're old enough, they get orphaned into other groups from other orphans that she's raised, where they're in a sheltered place where nothing can harm them. And she goes to visit them. She's quite elderly, she goes to visit them, and they all gather around her to wait to have a hug. How beautiful is that?
How cool is that?
You have to check my timeline. Yeah, and because they are elephants, it's so much about family. They grieve for them, and you know they will take their if one's sick and suffering, they will take it out of harm's way, so enemies or predators won't get them until they've recovered. They will carry them for miles or
wow.
take them somewhere
oh
else where they're safe until they recover. Animals are amazing, amazing teachers. I just love, we're so blessed that we are all here together. You know, they really teach us a lot about being human by them being animals, because they're more connected to nature sometimes than what we are. Sometimes we just get into that headspace too much. But here's an interesting thing with you, Garrett Miller. Now, I'm curious about this because, okay, let's start from the beginning. You were born in Oregon, in Salem.
Yep.
And you had a lot to do with Portland wrestling.
So I love Portland wrestling. Oh, my God.
Yeah, and you were this budding photographer, and you were awed by the theatrics of predetermined sports entertainment, because they are entertaining. And some of your
pictures. You don't really realize that when you are, you know, like a 10 or 12 year old, you think all of that stuff that's going on is real. And so, you know, that has a lot to do with it. Yeah. So I was a very young when that was going on, but I would take my cameras to all the matches because, you know, it was just something.
Yeah.
I always had a camera. I thank my parents, my grandparents for giving me, you know, a Kodak Instamatic and, you know, the Polaroid and all that. But I had a paper out since the time I was 9, and so one of my goals was to go get a 35-millimeter camera. So I'd gone out and got a Minolta XGM, which was, you know, the kind I wanted at the time. I'd done all the research. And I started taking pictures of the matches at the Salem Grand Theater. It was neither grand nor a theater, but it was where they had matches on Thursday nights. And my, you know, because I couldn't drive, my mom would drop me off, and my dad would drop me off, and you know, both of them would be bitching and moaning when I'd want to stay past 10 because they had to get up for work in the morning. But I would go and take pictures of the matches. And it was one of the most enjoyable, fun things I've ever done, because I would start watching it for different aspects, not watching it for, you know, what everybody else is going crazy for. It's like, well, I need to take a picture when the guy's up in the air, or it's going to be this, or it's going to be that. And I started submitting them to a magazine out of Minnesota that was, you know, that I got on the newsstand, but that they were published out of Minnesota or New York. And they had an amateur photo contest every month, and so I submitted some of my pictures. And I still have this letter someplace, but the guy wrote back, and he says, you know, dear Garrett, I'm really sorry to tell you, but your pictures are too professional for our magazine, and we can't have you submit them for the amateur contest. And so we wish you luck, and thank you very much, and goodbye. And I went, well, I got a huge chuckle out of that, because I'm like, you know, here I am this at the time, like a 13 or 14-year-old kid. And so I went, okay. I didn't really think that. I just thought it was laughable, so that's what he said. So I said, well, you know, the Northwest gets no coverage. And in that era, you know, the WWE used to be a tiny regional company. And so all of these different regional companies, it's kind of like if you had, what's a big like burger or restaurant chain in Brisbane?
Probably Hungry Jack's, or we have McDonald's over here, but
okay.
Red Rooster, some of those ones they call
them.
Yeah,
so you had a Red Rooster, you know, McDonald's, a Burger King, or whatever it was that you had, and you had a bunch of those. So you had all of these spread throughout the country. Well, they were each their own regional territory. And in Oregon, there was no journalistic coverage for the events. And so I took my same set of pictures that I was just told that were too professional, and I mailed them off to Pro Wrestling Illustrated out of Rockville Center, New York, to Mr. Bill Apter, who I had seen on the superstation, WTBS, in Atlanta, Georgia, interviewing, you know, at the time, the big stars like Dusty Rhodes and Ric Flair and all this. And the summer of my 15th summer, I was doing chores around the house, and my parents were going to give me a car, you know. It was my mom's old car, you know, so they had this whole thing worked out, but, you know, they're going to make me sweat for it. So the thing that I had to do is I had to paint the entire house, and I had to spread bark dust, and I had to do, you know, a whole laundry list of chores that I had to do over the course of summer. But I'm up on the front of the house on the ladder, you know, and this is back in the day. I probably should have had a safety helmet on, a rigging equipment and everything, but, you know, back then you're just like, well, just don't break your neck, you know, not like it is today and everybody freaks out. So our cordless phone rings. My sister brings it out to me and says, there's a guy on the phone for you. And I'm like, okay, that's great. Figure it was a customer that didn't get his paper or something like that. Get on the phone, and it's Mr. Bill Apter. And that was in 1982. And he hired me basically on the spot to cover the Northwest.
Wow.
And I said, do you know I'm only 15 and I can't even drive to the matches yet? And he says, well, can you get to the matches? Yes, Mr. Apter, I can get to the matches. So he said, great. And we worked together for the next, you know, 10 years on projects. And I would go and do things that I would have done for free, and they would send me these big fat checks. And I kept going, I love this. I'm doing something I love, and they're paying me a lot of money. So it was a great job. And
isn't that amazing?
Yeah, it was
and
so much
fun. And the Wrestler as well, not just Pro Wrestling Illustrated. You also in the Wrestler. The leading magazines of that era.
Mm. It was kind of like the Sports Illustrated of professional wrestling. So that publishing company had Pro Wrestling Illustrated, The Wrestler, Sports Review Wrestling, and Inside Wrestling. Those were the four big magazines. So out of the top 10, you know, those were four. I'd say they're probably out of those four, they were probably all in the top five or six. They had monthly circulations of, a quarter million, half million people, depending upon the magazine, for many years. But when the magazine industry died, that was about the time that Portland Wrestling died, as the WWF at the time took over many of those territories and locked out their TV, which, you know, anyhow, long story short, we could talk about professional wrestling for 6 hours and it never shut up. But that's what happened. So by that point, I'd moved to Arizona. I was going to college and needed a suntan and needed to pay bills, so I'd go to school during the day and work at night. And thankfully, I look back and say wrestling died, because if it had kept up, I'd have spent $200 on a round-trip plane ticket to go back to Portland to earn $500, you know, shooting matches and then come back. So it would have been just really dumb. But it was one of the most enjoyable, I don't even want to call it a job, but it's one of the most enjoyable experiences for 10 years that I was able to do. Just so much super fun. They were such a wonderful people. The Wrestlers were great, you know, because they have their personas, but, you know, you get outside of that, and, you know, they got to put their pants on one leg at a time, and they got a mortgage to pay, and they've got a, you know, wife to go home to. You don't ever think about any of that stuff when you see them on TV going, I'm going to beat up, Mary Lou next Monday night, and it's a hair versus hair match. You know, you don't think about it when you hear that, but, you know, when they walk out of the arena and they got to go home to their wife and kids, it's, you know, and help them with homework, it's different.
Ah, it reminds me of the caveman days. I could just imagine it, them dragging me with my hair.
Yeah.
Well, good luck with that. I just got it recently. But you also starred in a couple of TV commercials for a local Oregon company. How old were you there?
I was in high school. Yeah, I was young, and it was, you know, in the early days of cable TV, and one of the local companies at the time was Viacom. I don't know if Viacom is big in Australia, but it's a big cable company here, or it was. Their local office came out to where I was working, and the guy said, yeah, I want to do some commercials. And, he didn't want to be in them, and I'm a camera hog, so I shoved everybody else out of the way, and I said, you know, let me, you know, quote-unquote star in them. So I filmed a few commercials for him. You know, again, just super, super fun. It played in the local Oregon market, but it certainly gave me a taste of, oh, this is kind of cool, because people would see you on TV and, you know, start freaking out and, you know, say something at school, or, you know, see you at the store and, you know, yeah. Oh, I saw you on TV, you know, but, you know, that was a million years ago too.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, obviously from a very young age, you already had started the career that has continued up until now, really, with everything that you're doing, that you're always in the public eye and in the media or in some sort of creative aspect. But what makes me curious is, now you've got a Bachelor of Science in agribusiness, and that's a lot to do with farming and
well,
you know, everything to do with on a commercial level,
yeah,
more so though.
And so here's the story behind it. I'm going to make it real quick. I was going to Arizona State University getting a Bachelor of Science in business. And one of the requirements at the time is you had to get a passing grade in calculus. Well, by the time I had finally got down to Arizona State and played the system about how to get in-state tuition and the long story short, I couldn't pass calculus to save my life. At Arizona State, the first and only F, they called it an E, but the first and only F I ever got was in calculus. So I took it a second, the second time, and I got a D. I worked really hard. So I go to my counselor, and by this time, I'm 11 classes short of graduating. So I'm you know, 99% of the way done with my college. My college advisor says, well, you know, we're really sorry, but you have to have a C or better passing, you know, in the class. Let me give you an alternative. If you go to the community college this summer and take a statistics course and get an A, and take calculus and get an A, we'll let you continue in the College of Business and you can graduate next semester. And I said, great. So I went to the community college to you know, test in to calculus. I couldn't pass even their basic math course. So I talked to it was a 5-week summer class, or 5 days a week summer class at 7 a.m. So I showed up the first day of class 15 minutes early, and I said, here's the deal, teacher. I can't pass it. I need to graduate. She said, well, come back tomorrow, and we'll see. She just wanted to see if I'd show back up, but I showed up every single day. And at the end of that, I got 69.5%, which is still a D.
Excellent.
And she goes, I feel really sorry for you. I'm going to give you a C. Okay, so that's still not the A. I got the A in statistics, so I go back to the university and I say, well, I got the A in statistics, no problem. I did my very, very best, and I got a C in the calculus. And they said, well, too bad, so sad. There's nothing else we can do for you. Goodbye. So my only choices at that point were to go to a liberal arts program and take an additional 2 years, because I didn't have a foreign language, believe it or not, or transfer to the College of Agribusiness. So I went and talked to their advisor, and they said, yeah, we can get you out of here in 13 classes. Do you want to do it? And I said, "What? Sign me up." And so my degree in agribusiness originated from that. But, you know, here's the thing. Agribusiness really impacts so much more than just the fact that you think farming. If it's something you're sitting on, it's had to get manufactured somehow, and it came from somewhere. You know, if it's plastic, it came from some type of oil product. If it's a cloth, it's, you know, textiles, and it grew in a field somewhere. If it's a desk, you know, a wood desk, it came from a farm someplace, or, you know, a forest. So everything that touches your life comes on a truck that came from somewhere that had to make it. That's agribusiness.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a whole lot more simplistic to say, oh, it's just a bunch of corn on a cob or a bunch of cows out in the field. That's a huge part of it. But even though that, just those two little things are, you know, millions and millions and millions of different segments down the road that will, you know, be okay. So, you know, you never know.
Yeah. Wow. And so while you were doing all that, you kept writing and performing voiceovers for a national corporation, and also was the vice president of global business development with all that behind you. But then you had your sights on Hollywood in 2010.
You know, Mary Lou, I'll tell you, it's one of those things that I'd been with the company, and I'm still on by a shoestring. So I have one major national account that I still maintain a relationship with, and I love them very, very much, and they love me, which is a good thing. At that time, I was traveling back and forth to Los Angeles from our Phoenix office all the time, and my sales teammate and I would come out here and team sell or team account manage, which was great. You know, I think we both learned a lot from each other, but we'd just come back from an account call to a pizza company in Phoenix, and we're getting ready for our next trip out to California. And he was in the process of buying a big old house. I was in the process of trying to get rid of my houses. And he says, boy, it'd sure be nice if one of us could actually move out to California. Then we wouldn't have to keep going back and forth. And I raised my hand and said, sign me up. You know, I'd gotten tired of the heat. I'd gotten tired of, you know, just it just was very wearing. I loved my job. I love my customers. I love the people I work with. Great company. But I was coming back and forth all the time. So, you know, within about 6 months, you know, it's kind of one of those things. I just watched The Secret. I don't know if you've seen that movie by Rhonda Byrne or read the book. But I'd done my vision board. I'd done, you know, my money comes easily and frequently. You know, I have more than enough. I did all of those things. And all of these things started happening in my life. You know, I got rid of my houses that were holding me back. My job let me transfer out to California. That was great. You know, so all these things happened. And over the, you know, over a very short period of time, it just ended up, I started getting connected with people, quote unquote, in the industry. And then, you know, I don't want to say the rest, shall we say, is history, because we're making the history today. But I started making some good connections and, you know, started doing the radio show with my friend Rebecca. We did the Garrett and Rebecca show for about 6 months. And it was a lot of fun.
Right.
Yeah.
So is she, was she the former client?
She was.
In Laguna Beach?
Yeah, it was funny because when we first met, and I hope she's listening tonight, she actually had surgery on her knee last week, and I'm not speaking out of turn, but you know, she may be a little loopy on pain pills, so she may be getting us a little bit later. So, Rebecca, I hope you're feeling good. But it was funny when I first go to meet her. Mm. At the end of our meeting, she comes out to my car to, you know, to say goodbye. Her husband and her son were in the house, and they're getting ready for dinner. And she goes, and you know, I'm a little bit psychic. And I go, and I'm a little bit rock and roll. You know, because what do you say to something like that? So, but that was where we left it. I never once asked her about it. And then, you know, like a year and a half later, she sends me an email and says, by the way, I'm going to be down in, you know, Laguna, and I'd love to see you, and I'm going to do this show, and I'm looking for a host, and you're it. I mean, there's a little bit more to the story than that, but that's the simplified version.
Yeah.
And the next thing you know, we're doing the show together 5 nights a week, and it was just so much fun. You know, because neither of us had done this, so it's like trial by error. You know, you learn that if there's radio silence, there better have been a bomb going off or something, because you just don't have silence on the radio. And so, you know, we'd figure out the awkward silences between both of us, and, you know, we ended up with a really fun format. Now, she's gone off to do her own solo project, and, of course, then I started Rated G Radio, and, you know, so here we are.
Well, and here we are. And now I'm working with you as well, which is an absolute delight and pleasure.
Oh,
and
we have so much
I've
fun.
And the thing I learned the most about interviewing is how many times I say, and wow, wow. Actually, I think I got wow from you. I listened to the playback of me and Rick, and I'm just like, wow, wow, oh, wow. But, you know, he's a wow factor.
Can I tell you something, Mary Lou?
You
know, I listen to talk radio all day when I'm in the car, and there's the world needs more wows. So if you're using wow, I think that's a good thing. So don't stop. That could be your trademark. You know, wow by Mary Lou.
The wow factor.
Yeah.
Puts the wow back in the fact. So you've been doing this for so long. You've had people like the 2012 presidential candidate, an Olympic gold medalist. You've had TV stars, Grammy winners, director, filmmakers, a Broadway star from Phantom of the Opera, award-winning authors, business moguls, pet advocates, international recording artists. I mean, you've had over 150,000 listeners and fans.
Oh, yeah, it's crazy.
Everything's fresh. Everything's fresh and unscripted. You know, it's just great. And I think that's what people love about it, because you're creating history as we speak. And then now you did your Friday night dance party. So you're now currently syndicated on two of the UK networks, Chat and Spin Radio and West Star Radio.
Hi, everybody,
you know,
over there.
Hello. Everybody over at Chat and Spin Radio, West Star Radio, which is one of their highest rated programs, is Rated G Radio. They love you.
Isn't
over
that
there.
Fun? I love the people in the UK. I do a live interview with the Chat and Spin team every Thursday morning. It's my time at 9:30, but it's really like 5:30 in the afternoon their time. And I get a chance to talk to the folks over there, you know, each week about what's coming up for that week's show. They could not be more lovely and warm and inviting. And I would love to go over to the UK and kind of do a little mini tour later this year. The folks over there are just absolutely fantastic. So I love them. And I'm just so grateful for the opportunity.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, you also have co-hosted with Dirty Pop with Lance Bass on Sirius XM's Out Q.
Oh, my gosh.
Like,
talk about
those guys are like... I saw
it's the real deal, you know.
You cover photo on your page. You're all poking your tongues out.
Well, it was,
thought,
you know,
well, imagine you all together. The energy would be incredible.
It was one of those things that I had the opportunity to do it. I jumped at it, and it was not what I expected. And I mean this in the most respectful, fantastic way, because Lance and his team could not have been more wonderful and polite and professional to me. But the entire experience of how the show went and everything was completely not what I expected. And I left there. My producer was with me, and he goes, "You know, sometimes it's, you know, it's not what we think." And I said, "I've got to figure out how I can spin this in my head so I can feel, you know, like this is a great experience." And so, you know, what I took away from it was that, you know, I got to see how a professional, you know, real radio show works that has deadlines. You know, so if, let's say, if we go over a few minutes or something like that, we go over a few minutes, no big deal. They have hard stops. So if they're in the middle of a conversation with somebody and the show's over, guess what? The show's over. Too bad. I learned a lot of, you know, because it's true, because, you know, we tend to go over, you know, often on all of our stuff. And that's okay, because we have the flexibility to do it. The show shows as a two-hour show, but even though it's really an hour. But I have it set up that way, so if I run long, well, it runs long. And, you know, nobody's, you know, no big deal. That's how I paid for the show to be, you know, set up. But, you know, it was very, very interesting to see him go, you know, bam, bam, bam. We've got this segment to get this person in. You know, I got to get them on a mic. And then afterwards, you know, because at the time it was filmed at Lance's house in his basement. You know, they call it the basement. And so, you know, everybody would filter into this house, you know, and you have these complete strangers, you know, and they don't, you know, they were just part of the thing. They would all go down to the basement. You know, they would do the show. It was set up just beautifully, beautiful desk, beautiful microphones, the whole setup. And then within 15 minutes of the show being over, everybody was out of the house because he had, you know, other appearances that he had to go do. And that's just how it runs. It was like, this is a well-oiled machine. This is something really cool to see.
Yes.
So, yeah,
yes.
Really, really, I'm so grateful for that.
Yeah, it is very different. Even when I used to be the lead singer for the Brisbane Bullets at the NBL here, you know, Channel 10, here's the running time sheet. And I remember Leroy Loggins, who was the ambassador for Australia at the time, when I became a citizen here. But he was running down the court, and I just observed, because they used to call him Leapin' Leroy, and his knees would literally come up to his chin as he was flying down the court, and I couldn't help myself, you know me. And there I was over the microphone, and I just went, "Leapin' Leroy Loggins!" And, well, you could see all the Channel 10 guys looking around, going, "Where did that come from? That was in the schedule." And I thought, "Oh, I'm just going to try and hide behind the microphone here." Oops. I probably shouldn't have done that. But, you know, these things happen. And day, when we finished with Rick, you went, "Well, we've got to go." And it was like, we cut it off. And then the last thing you hear me saying is, "Bye."
Yeah, right.
You have to laugh.
Yeah.
Trying to do an ad, a voiceover in 30 seconds, you know. You learn to read fast and you learn to intonate, as you've done quite a few. But you're also, you have written a book, and you've also co-wrote and recorded a four-song EP in 2013, Eyes Wide, which is a beautiful song. So when did you start singing? You know, you've had a lot of great response. Especially with your music video, the single "Guess What It's Christmas Time," which was so cute with the puppy.
So much
fun. Beautiful.
Well, the story behind that is that I was already doing the radio show, and the radio show started to take off a little bit, and I wanted to have a theme song to the show, and I wanted it to be something that, you know, when I started becoming Howard Stern or, you know, something like that, that I could take the song with me And, you know, everybody would just think, okay, this is the signature song. It's not like something else that somebody else did. So I said, well, you know, as experienced as I am doing, you know, the talk radio, it's, you know, 6 months of experience at that point. I said, I think I'm going to write a song, and I think I'm going to sing it. Now, I hadn't sung since sixth grade choir, which is 300 years ago. So, you know, my only singing experience is in the car when, you know, I got the windows rolled up. But I just put it out there, and like so much of my life the last couple of years, I just put it out there in the universe, and I said, I want to do this, and I'm going to do this, and then magically it kind of happens. But I ended up in the studio with my producer, Brian Pothier, who is clearly an angel sent from God, because anybody who would be willing to, number one, work with me on the one song, but then be a glutton for punishment for three more, deserves, you know, a fast track to heaven when his time has come. But I couldn't sing at all, and he used auto-tune liberally to really get the first tune to sound even passably okay. But I had so much fun doing it, and he said at the end, if you ever want to work together again, let me know. And so a couple months passed, he poked me a note, and I said, yeah, I think I'd like to do another one. So I did Eyes Wide. I actually sang a little bit on this one, and then we started, you know, experimenting with my voice. Still terrible, but, you know, still, you know, going through emotions.
No, it is not.
Well, but, you know, there's a lot of help on there, too. And so, you know, he gets everything squared away. And then we did, you know, the second or the third and fourth song, which ended up being the Guess What? It's Christmas Time. But, you know, at the end of that, you know, because you know, we've got like 15 minutes left, Mary Lou, not that I'm counting the clock.
I know.
But at the end of that process, I said, you know, I'd like to release this as an EP. And my whole thing was, I don't know if anybody that I grew up with has done an EP. Not that I'm trying to be in a competition with them, because I'm not. But it's one of those that I thought, well, this would be kind of fun to do. So did it. And then it sold. It sold really, really well. And I just kind of said, well,
yeah, I mean,
you can have
your speaking voice on radio is very melodic as well. And, but you know, the more,
but that doesn't mean that people are
going
to go out and buy it. You know, you can have a great voice. I can point to 1,000 singers that have a much better voice than me and don't sell a single record. And then I can also point to Psy, who has, you know, Gangnam Style and sell, you know, breaks YouTube with over 2 billion hits. So, you know, there's not justice in the world. So I'm not looking for justice. Mm-hmm. I just, you know, I'm just looking for some sales.
Yeah.
But it's sold.
Oh, where
is
it gone?
You know, yeah.
Garrett,
are you there?
We've lost you.
I'm here. You've lost me?
Oh, there we go.
There we go.
I've got your back. Yeah.
Okay. Anyway.
There was a bit of, I think that was Gangnam. He may only be a one-hit wonder, though. But
I
think, will continue.
I hope so.
He's had his 15 minutes of fame. But you've been destined since you were a child. Now, you are about to release, very soon, an 11-track album, Blonde
mm-hmm.
Jesus, co-written with producer Brian Pothier and yourself. And it's songs that feature a mixture of rock, dance, tribal beats, paired with lyrics that are aimed to inspire people to achieve their dreams. So, you know, what is this message you're bringing across with this album that's coming out? Let's look at the whole Blonde Jesus concept for starters, because that's
going
to create a story.
Let's start. Well, and that's with intent and purpose. Now, you know, the we can go through the funny reason why I wanted to do this song, and the funny reason was I was at a Hollywood celebrity Christmas party this past year, and I'd already started to kind of grow the 5 o'clock shadow, and my hair was starting to grow, but I was doing it for like the rocker look, not, you know, anything else. And at this party, all the ladies were going like, you know, where's that Blonde Jesus guy? Where's that Blonde Jesus guy? And then they were talking about me, and then right after that, people started saying, you know, hey Barry Gibb, hey Andy Gibb, and they were calling me the Bee Gees, and that, and I thought, okay, this
you
is,
do look
you know,
like a, you do.
The universe is telling me I need to do another song. What's that song going to be? It needs to be a disco song like the Bee Gees would do, and it's going to be called Blonde Jesus. Why? Because that will piss everybody off, and if it pisses everybody off, they'll be talking about it. And if they talk about it, they might buy it. So,
yeah,
but
that's
the song
right.
itself,
that's right.
Really, the message of the song is, and this is what really is important to me, is that I keep seeing on TV and the internet so many images of what, they claim to be Christian, but they're out there spewing a lot of hate and vile messages about, you know, if you eat toast on a Tuesday, you're going to hell. If you eat, you know, if you wear your hair like this, you're going to hell. Or if you do this, you're going to hell. And I'm like, who are you? Because, you know, God teaches the message of love. I can't, you know, if you want to sit here and memorize scriptures and memorize all of that stuff, that is great. But you're reading a story that was written with a specific intent, and you're doing it, you know, with, now you're putting your slant on it that it now includes hate. And instead of focusing on the things that God wants to do, which is help people, love people, make the world a better place, this is what you're doing. Well, if that's what you're going to do, then this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to sing a song about the fact that God loves everybody. And if you don't like that, too bad, because it's not for you. It's for everybody else. So the other 99.5% of the world can like Blonde Jesus and enjoy it. And we can go, I'm Blonde Jesus with a message to be told. You know, I can do the whole thing.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, that's the song. It's, you know, it's not about the fact that I'm not trying to be Jesus Christ, because I am not. But, you know, if we're all children of God, you know, Jesus was a child of God, so
that's
I think if we're all going to be messengers in our own way, my message is going to be a positive one. It's going to be a happy one. It's going to be one that's going to lift people up and let them feel good about their day. You don't have to like me. You don't have to like my look. You don't have to like the music video. You don't have to like any of that. But you're going to love the song, and you'll sing along with it. And at the end of the day, it's kind of like, you know, if you sing a song, you know, I'm rich in every way, doo-dah, doo-dah. You know, you sing that long enough, you're rich in every way.
Yeah.
You know, so now I'm going to have you sing,
right.
you know, this message of love, and that's really what Blonde Jesus is about. But that's a longer
that's
explanation
right.
of what you're looking for, but that's it.
No, but, you know, it's when a lot of people, you know, even the Christian, because I don't follow any particular religion myself, because I do think very much in a native way. I mean, I work with these divine beings in the healing that I do. And the whole thing with this divine source and those people who have walked before us and taught unconditional love, taught us the path how to get back to finding that, you know, that divineness within ourselves. Well, even the Christian people say, take Jesus into your heart. And if you're going to take them into your heart, then the heart is about love. It's the pathway back to a path
mm-hmm.
of love, and there is
mm-hmm.
no room for hate or fear.
No.
So, you know, I think this is a great thing. I think it's going to really, you know, this message is going to be very big. It will go viral. I know it will, but in a good way, in an
all from your mouth to God's ears. That's
way.
All. I'm fine with that. Let's make it happen.
People need that. They need to restore and believe. They need that faith renewed again. And all
mm-hmm.
those messages, especially when you sing it, it becomes your song, and you start to dance to it, and you start to renew all those things that you already know really innately are within there. But it sort of dissipates. Music is wonderful for that. It dissipates all the doubt. And that's what we need to bring more of. So I'm so excited about it. And you've also got your lead single, Gay Wedding,
oh my gosh.
Which is
yeah.
an adaptation of the classic 1982 song Wide Wedding by the iconic Billy Idol himself. This is the video you're going to do. Is that right?
So call me crazy, but a lot of the stuff that I'm doing is crazy, and it gets done. But on Monday the 30th of March, we're going to be filming both the music videos for Blonde Jesus and Gay Wedding. And like you said, the Gay Wedding is the retelling of, you know, modern-day retelling of Billy Idol's 1982 classic White Wedding. And I've gotten the okay from the publisher, so, you know, we're getting all of the clearances now, so it'll officially be released, knock on wood, May 5th, 5/5/15, Cinco de Mayo, wherever you're at for that. But one of the things that I felt really compelled to do, and, you know, it's one of those things, I'm sitting here writing, you know, a different song, and I know that I have one more song that I have to do for the album, and White Wedding comes on the radio, and I'm singing along to it on my Sirius XM radio that I've got here, you know, and I'm just like, dun da da dun da dun dun da dun dun. And at the same time, I'm reading an article on the computer about how gay marriage is passing in all these states in the United States. And I went, oh, wouldn't that be fun? You know, a gay wedding. It's a nice day for a gay wedding. And so I said, I called up my producer immediately and said, we've got to do Gay Wedding. And he's like, what are you talking about? And so I kind of told him the story. And he goes, that's great, but, you know, you probably need to get okay from, you know, somebody first. And I said, it's going to happen. I just know with every fiber of my being it's going to happen. It's going to happen. So we went to work in the studio. Brian, you know, reimagined the music brilliantly. He's a master guitar player. I'm so lucky to have him working on this project with me. I redid the lyrics, and so I now tell a tale about both a gay couple and a lesbian couple who want to get married to the love of their life. And in the song, you know, it starts, instead of, you know, it starts out, "Hey, Mr. Mister, look what we've done." And then the lyric for the sister in the second verse is, "Hey, sister, sister," you know, and so I go off and tell their story. But, you know, the whole thing is, you know, it's a nice day for a gay wedding. And we just have so much fun in the song. We're going to have an album cut, which is longer. It's kind of like the extended play. It's not a remix. It's just an extended play that runs about 6 minutes. And then the music video version is about four. So we've cut a lot of out of that just to get it down so people will watch it and I don't have to spend $1 million on the filming. But we're going to do that this coming Monday. And looking forward to that, we're getting members of the LGBT community that want to come down and participate, either as audience members or get, quote-unquote, pretend married. And we'll, you know, we're going to have Downey's Desserts providing desserts, and it's going to be filmed at the fantastic Church of the Foothills in Santa Ana. So if you want to go, you know, you got to send me a note on Facebook, and you know, then I got to put you on a list, and because I can't have 8 million people show up, and I think we're going to have a big crowd.
Oh, I wish I could be there.
I know.
I
want to
be there. I know.
Yeah.
I know. I'm moving and doing all kinds of crazy things myself.
I know. Your life is crazy too.
My life has always been crazy. So, like, you know, I've got the scoop on crazy, I think. But good crazy.
Yeah.
I hope. You never know. They could be watching me right now. No, I'm just kidding aside. But
well, you never know.
Don't spread the word. Not yet. Well, you never know where I'll end up. But I know I love doing this. I love interviewing people and hearing their stories.
Well, you're great at it,
me
you know.
Thank you. Well, you know, you've been my mentor, and I've followed your lead, and, you know, it's just been so much fun. And haven't we had just the best guests on this year? Oh, my gosh.
Here's something about you, Mary Lou. You know, you are fearless. And, you know, I have these great guests, and most of my guests find me. So I'm lucky in that regard. Now, I used to have to go out and say, you know, would you please come on my show? And people would take pity upon me. Now people find me, and so my job is really easy. I just book guests, and I'm booking, you know, 6 to 8 weeks or longer in advance. And I have you, Mary Lou, who just says, you know what? I'm going to go ask these people to be on the show, and I'm going to interview them. And I'm like, well, good for you. And you go out and get Rick Mora from Hollywood, who's, you know, probably like 40 miles away. And I should have, you know, thought about going to interview Rick Mora. But here you're doing it live.
No,
and your interview is great. And you've got all of these people that you just go out and say, I'd like to have you on the show. And, you know, just looking, I'm going to do a little self-promotion for you. But we've got Xavier Sayer coming up on April 7th that you're going to interview. We have got Barry Gray, who's the 2013 Psychic of the Year in Australia, coming up on April 23rd that you're going to be interviewing.
Yep.
Who else? I've got Mary Lou. You're doing another takeover on Monday, May 11th with Lynn Trail. Sizzling at 70.
Yes.
You know, we've got,
amazing.
I mean, I lose track. There's just, you know, we're into June at that point. So you've got all kinds of folks coming up.
Yeah, we've also got Martha Reich, Braden, who's, you know, Martha Reich has just been a beautiful folk singer. So there's just so many people that are so talented and have quite the story and quite the gift to share with us all. And it's such a pleasure. And even interviewing you today, Garrett, I mean, I've known you for about a year now. And you know, I love everything about you and what you represent and this gift that you, this platform you give people to be able to talk about what they love.
Isn't it fun, though?
It is. I love it. I'm like, okay, what's next? Where's the next radio station? You know,
I don't know.
I just want this to be an ongoing thing. But, you know, eventually I'll need to eat. So that's a good thing. But for you, trust me. No. But for you, what are you grateful for? And how would you define happiness for you?
Let me start with what I'm grateful for. You know, 5-10 years ago, I was grateful for a big mansion that I overpaid for and cars that I couldn't afford and being overextended on credit for a bunch of crap that I didn't want or need but felt I needed to keep up with everybody. In the last year, God has really And I'm not sitting here trying to tell people what they need to think on religion or God or anything like that, but this is my story, so I say for me. But God really humbled me in the last year in a lot of ways. My life and my lifestyle changed completely. I was I ended up moving from the house that I'd been in here in California for several years, and because the owners were coming back and I had to move. Circumstances were such that, you know, basically everything in my life I had to sell in order to just make that happen. So I moved with a mattress and a desk to some place that a year before I would have said there's no way I'd ever consider living in, quote-unquote, that place. But I'd never seen that place. I just thought of that place. And I moved. Mm-hmm. And it was very humbling because, you know, I come from a 5,000-square-foot house in Arizona with, you know, five bedrooms and extra rooms and a theater room and a, you know, big outdoor pool and blah, 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 blah. And here I am with a desk and a mattress. Not even a bed frame, but a mattress. And I said, okay, you know, what is going on here? And I said, oh, all of the stuff that I don't need that doesn't serve me is now gone.
Yeah.
I am really grateful for my desk. I'm really grateful for a mattress. A lot of people don't have that. And so, you know, all of the things that have been weighing me down, keeping me from being creative, keeping me from doing the things that I really wanted to do in life, were still there. And when I moved this past year, all those things just kind of went away. And more go away, you know, a little bit every day. And that's not to say, I haven't, you know, bought, steps for the dogs to run up on the bed. I did buy a bed frame eventually, you know. So, you know, some things like that. But at the time, I just simply couldn't do it. And so I'm grateful for the fact that I've been given a lot of perspective on, you know, what I have to have or what I thought I needed to have versus what I, you know, what I have. Because what I have is more than enough. I've got a roof over my head. I have good food that I can eat every day. I am able to pay my rent. I'm, you know, I've got a desk that allows me to sit here and do my show and talk to you. You know, and I look at that and say, you know what? I have a lot to be grateful for. I have excellent health. You know, there are a lot of people out there that don't feel good every day. I feel great every day. You know, every day I say, I know that I am living the life of my dreams. Now, my dreams may look different than yours, and that's certainly okay, because you don't have to have like my dreams, and I don't have to like yours. But for what I want to do in life, I'm doing it. You know, I do this show 5 nights a week. I get to talk to people like you.
That's amazing.
When I'm not doing this, I'm in the studio working on new music. I'm working on a sitcom. I'm doing these other things. You know, and they don't, you know, it's been a lot of planting seeds as a farmer for ideas and creativity and prosperity. You do a lot of farming. You do a lot of planting. You do a lot of cultivating, putting that Miracle-Gro on it. And now things are starting to pop out of the ground, and they're starting to grow like crazy. And so I'm grateful for this past year that that's where, you know, God has placed me and taken me and allowed me to develop and grow so I can be where I'm at right now. Because this next year, holy cow, it's going to be like springtime. It's going to go boom. Everything's going to grow like crazy.
Oh, it will. And I've seen it. So many around you have seen this for you. You can feel it. You can feel when you're being pulled and you're also in that energy. And that's what I decided the other day. I thought, I have to find somewhere to live. No, I can't take my bed. I can't take the couch because there's just no room for it. You know, because my whole life is really changing. Everything that I thought I had worked hard for and studied for, I'm actually going back to what I love doing the most.
Yeah.
And that's in the creative world, radio, healing, talking, teaching people, motivating people. That's what I've always done, where I've found my most success. But sometimes you think you have to follow some path that other people told you this is how you do it to be successful in the world. But really, what makes you successful is when you are living life, you love it with such passion, and then the doors just literally do fly open like they are for you. And you're only just beginning. I mean, you've had an incredible career already, but you are really just catching on everything.
Oh, bless you.
Just explode around.
It's a reinvention.
And we
love
you.
Yeah.
It is.
Well, I love you as well. You make doing this so much fun, and I look forward to every time we get a chance to visit. You know, and what the listeners don't know is that you and I don't really have a chance to visit offline much. I think we've had maybe one or two conversations ever, but I feel like I know you just, you know, from having you here on the show, and you've become a very good friend. So I publicly thank you for that.
Likewise, and to you too, Garrett. I mean, I think, you know, Creator just thought these two would work well together because they can create a fusion of magic. And they've
there we
both
go.
Got a great, because you have a great sense of humor. You're very personable. We just love you. Your listeners love you.
Oh, bless you.
And we
yeah.
just love being, you know, there around your desk with you. It's like just sitting down and having a chat. And, you know, the whole world and everything that's happening around it is spills out. And everybody just loves it. Because they need that hope and that faith. So we are very blessed to have you, that you can do this 5 nights a week, that you can invite the rest of the world in with you, because it will only grow and get bigger. And it's been such a pleasure to be able
well,
to
thank
interview you.
You
today,
yeah.
Garrett.
And guess what? We're now 5 minutes past.
You bring. We are. And,
and West Star Radio is going to kill me. They're going to like, You went over.
Oh, okay. So it is kind of a big deal. But you know what? I can't wait. Everybody, look for Blonde Jesus. Look for this album and this gay wedding. It's going to blow your mind. And our favorite man, Garrett Miller, radio show host, producer, singer, artist, you name it, he's the man. He's the man that can do the Blonde Jesus. Trust me. And
well, thank you, Mary
Lou. It's just going to go so big. It's going to be so big. So I'm going to keep everybody posted, and when it comes out, there's going to be, you know, it's going to hit the world in a good way.
There we go.
So,
there we go.
So much love and blessings to you and to all the Rated G listeners. Keep it coming. Great guests this week. Thank goodness you got to talk about that before we started.
Yeah.
We'll say goodbye from Australia.
Okay. Bye from Australia. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody.
We'll
see you there. Thanks for tuning in.
Okay.
You've been listening to
okay.
Rated G Radio.